school is very good at teaching you to fit in and to color inside the lines and to follow the path for success and to look up to the standard people. But the real world rewards people who stand out, who think outside of the box, who break from the pack and do something legendary by doing things differently. This notion of trying to do what everybody's doing and follow the crowd. And it's like, no. Like, try to the opposite. Like, try to focus on looking things from different angles and do what people are not doing and ask the hard questions. And I feel like that's where you really get to something interesting.
I'm Misha Da Vinci. This is the Griff Podcast, conversations with founders, technologists, scientists, researchers, creatives, authors, and experts to get you ready for the very different future we are already living in. This is a time when education is everything, and not just for kids. The people who will make it in today's world are those who can learn, unlearn, and relearn fast. My guest today spends her time building new learning experiences. Ana Lorena Fabrega is an educator, writer, and entrepreneur. She's the chief evangelist at Synthesis School, an educational network where kids learn complex problem solving through competitive team games. Ana earned her BS in childhood education and special education from New York University. She taught first to fifth grade in New York, Boston, and Panama for 5 years. Then, frustrated with the modern education system, she quit her job as a teacher in 2019 and began writing about the promise of alternative education. Ana is the author of The Learning Game, teaching kids to think for themselves, embrace challenge, and love learning. This conversation gets deep very quickly. We talk about transforming education so that children can learn the skills they need to thrive in the real world, how to stop dumbing kids down and instead support them to unleash their unique genius, why kids crave a challenge and want complexity, how adults can keep learning forever, the five lessons you need to unlearn, how to make yourself irreplaceable by AI, and much more. This is 70 minutes that will help you delete old ideas and forever change your life. Let's dive in and get ready for the future. Ana, thanks for coming on. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Thank you, Misha, for having me. I'm also excited to chat.
You are an edupreneur. Like, what exactly is an edupreneur?
Great question. So my background is as an educator, right? So I went down the traditional route of studying childhood education and special education with a concentration in psychology. And even though, I mean, I went to NYU and it has a more progressive sort of education program with the new tendencies and preparing teachers for this like future that we're getting into, or so that's what it promises, right? But when I was going through the system, I started to realize just by observing in the different placements that I got to go as part of the my formation, you had to observe for 200 hours kids in different placements. And that's when I started to realize that even if we have the new practices and the new approaches, and as long as we're stuck in this traditional environments and doing things very much the way we've been doing it for the past 200 years, the outcomes are not going to be very different. And I started to see some red flags when I would look at the students and see that lack of appetite for learning, and when they had no idea what they were good at, but they were very clear about the things that they were not good at. And just this lack of desire to keep on learning and to question things, and it just felt like they were all learning about the same things and to think the same way and to do the same things. And it's like, well, that's a big threat to innovation, as I'm sure you know. And so I started to notice all these things. And then I try to do things differently in my classroom when I became a teacher. But really within, even though I did things differently, it's very hard to make things go in a different direction to the point of making an actual change within the system, right? There are just so many parameters and bureaucracy and things that you need to adhere to. And so I decided to leave without really knowing. I was like, there has to be a better way, right? And if it's not within the system, then outside the system. And I had no idea that there was this whole world of alternative education where you have all these startups and alternative schools trying to do things differently and, you know, really paving the way. And a lot of the practices that they have are actually very old practices, very Lindy, right, that have stood the test of time and that they're sort of bringing them back because they work. But many of the schools or startups, they don't have to adhere by these rules and parameters and standards and competition. And so they can really do things differently. And the results were just impressive, right? The kids were excited. They were empowered. They wanted to keep learning. They were taking reins over their education. And that's sort of like the future that I envision. And so I changed my title, right? Instead of being an educator, well, I'm still an educator and I will always be an educator, but I'm also an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. right? So an edupreneur is kind of like blending those two worlds together where you're building new learning experiences that are more tailored for the future and that kids want to be part of. So I sort of came up with that term, but I now see it being used around. So maybe there were other people using it before me. I just seen it when I decided to sort of like change that title.
This podcast is all about preparing people for the future. Why? Well, I mean, people have always been preparing themselves for the future. That's what going to school is supposed to mm-hmm. be about. That's what we think about. We're like, oh, I have to plan for next year, or the year after, or 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, or whatever. So we're always getting ready for the future. Mm-hmm. But how I think about it is this future that we're living in is this time when change is changing, the rate of change is exponential, and the forces around us are completely different, so that we have to think very differently about it. And all of the systems and structures and ideas and ways of doing things that were relevant or worked in the past literally have no place right now. Mm-hmm. So we have to change every single thing we're mm-hmm. doing. And one of the things that I think about a lot is the fact that all of us have to be way more entrepreneurial about how we live and how we think and about our abilities and how we put them out there into the marketplace. And there's a massive range of things we have to think about differently. But I'm excited to hear that as an educator, you're doing that. You're mm-hmm. like, oh, educator, what does that mean? How do I take those lenses and the vision and ideas and goals and what drives me and what motivates me and sort of match that up with what an entrepreneur would do, mm-hmm. be an innovator, think differently, create new things, create new possibilities, and merge those two areas and then maybe create something super exciting and sexy for the whole world. So mm-hmm. yay, I'm talking to an edupreneur, people. You know, let's get on. This is what it's about.
Yes, yes, yes. And you know something you mentioned? I actually think that kids and entrepreneurs have a lot of things in common, right? Especially kids before they enter sort of this system and before we start to impart our, you know, all of our ideals and what society expects from them and how to do things. But before that, they, you know, something they have in common is that they'll look at something that the rest of the world, adults, et cetera, will look as mundane and like, you know, as something regular, and they will see it as new and fresh and ripe with opportunity. And they're like excited to jump in. They're like kind of looking at things from different angles, right? And I feel like we kind of suck that out of them when we train them to, oh no, this is the path. These are the things you need to learn. These are the things you're going to need for a future where 2/3 of the kids that are going through grade school right now are going to have jobs that haven't been invented. However, here's what you need to learn, and this is what you're going to be. And so we kind of remove that element that they naturally have. And so I'm so curious of how can we, not only as adults, go back to that and sort of like tap into our inner kid, but how can we preserve that in the younger generation? That's one of those things that really drives my work.
Yes, I love it, love it, love it. Oh my gosh, so good. Growing up, you lived all over the world. Tell us about your childhood a little bit and how you became the person that you are today, because I think we are all unique. Mm-hmm. We're all exceptional mm-hmm. and unique as individuals. There's no question. But as we've just been talking about, so many of us lose that. I think somehow not only did you not lose that, but your journey really preserved that for you and helped you to see the value of it. So anyway, tell us about that.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Panama, but when people ask me, where are you from? I'm like, I'm kind of from all over the world. By the time that I was 14, I had lived in 7 different countries. So Panama, Colombia, Venezuela, India, Mexico, Brazil, and the US. And I had attended 10 different schools. And so really, all my childhood was in a suitcase, you know, with my mom, my sister, and my dad. We're packing up. Where are we going next? Where are we going next? I was always the new girl, right? And I went to all sorts of different types of schools, right? Private, public, religious, non-religious or non-denominational, more progressive, way very, very traditional. And, you know, I didn't realize this as I was growing up, but the reason why I was able to adapt and sort of, you know, be able, like take in all this changes was because I learned to play what I talk about in my book, The Game of School, right? And The Game of School is very easy to master, and it's going to sound familiar to a lot of people because it's those things that you need to do, like how to please your teacher, how to get good grades, fill in the assignment, like what to ask, what not to ask so you don't get in trouble. Like all these little tricks that are around this idea of like obedience and compliance and order. Yeah. And that's how you win in that game, right? I became really good at it. And I was able to go from one level to another, different schools, and pick it up because the game, even though it was different schools, it looked pretty much the same everywhere. However, I realized that that's not what was making me actually learn. Like that was sort of the school learning, right? The things that I needed to get out of the way in order to then immerse in the genuine learning that was happening outside of school when I was doing the things that I was naturally inclined to do. I've always been very curious, very passionate about learning about different things and new cultures and new languages. And I love meeting new people and just like talking to new people and seeing how we all have different perspectives and how the world is, you know, very, you know, you can experience the world very, very differently depending on where you're born and where you live and the kind of things that you're exposed to. And so I've always been fascinated by that. And that was really what was driving my learning, right? And my mom was very, very good at letting that happen and creating the conditions for that genuine learning to happen outside of school. And so I was very lucky about that. And so fast forward, when I decided, you know, when I graduated, I wanted to work with kids. And so that's when I decided to study education. And I did have all this, let's say like this unique perspective that I think that shook everything off because I had all my experience as a kid in all these different placements. And then when I got to watch the kids as I was going through the program, I was like, oh my God, that's when it dawned on me. They are all playing the game of school. Yeah. This is universal, but it hadn't quite clicked until then. And so I guess that like having, you know, having had experienced that myself as a student and then being a teacher in Panama, New York, and Boston, and seeing how regardless of what I tried to do and the different schools and the different ages, they were all falling back into the game of school once they left my classroom, even when they went to great teachers. Like it's just this thing about the system that just sucks them back that I think that gave me, you know, I don't like it when people are like, oh, describe me as Anna, the expert in alternative education. I'm like, I'm no expert. Like what I have is my experience as a student of all these different schools, my experience as a teacher then having taught so many kids, and then all the research that I've done since I left the school system to sort of back up the things that I was questioning and concerned about, right? And so the combination of those three things, I think, is what makes me, let's call it unique, and the fact that I'm very, very passionate, like genuinely passionate about this. Like I wake up every morning, I'm thinking about this. So I think that combination of my background, my experience, and then it's really what drives all my work.
Yeah. So Synthesis is this school that emerged out of Elon Musk's experimental school at SpaceX. And you are their chief evangelist. Mm-hmm. So tell us about Synthesis, how it's changing education and learning and what you do. What's your role there and how that works?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I went from being, you know, at, you know, in one side of the spectrum, right, in the very, very traditional classroom, to now being in the other side of the spectrum, sort of like at the edge of innovation. So I'm part of this startup called Synthesis that, like you said, came out of the school that Elon Musk and one of our co-founders, Josh Don, built in SpaceX at Hawthorne back in 2014 for Elon's kids. Because Elon, like many of us, saw that the system's broken and that, you know, we're sort of like killing that desire to learn that kids are naturally born with. We're not really teaching kids how to think, but we're teaching them what to think. Learning is not exciting for them. They don't have skin in the game. Like it should be project-based where they can see how the subjects integrate and not like in silos. So he saw very much all the things that people that know what's broken understand. And so he was like, let's start a school from zero. He obviously had the resources to, you know, build it from the ground up and really rethinking education from first principles. What does that mean? That the two parameters that sort of like drove the school is like, well, what do we know about kids and how they develop? And what are the things that they're going to need in order to thrive in a future that's constantly changing, that is chaotic, and that comes with a lot of adversity, right? How do we prepare kids for that?
Right.
And so those were the principles that became then, you know, Ad Astra, the original school. And the whole point was, okay, we're going to teach kids through projects and through problems, real life problems that they have stakes in the game, right? And then as they need different information, then that's when you introduce the information, right? Like that's how they see how the tools are relevant. And so that was one thing. And the other thing was, we're not going to have grade levels. Why? Because that's putting a speed limit to where kids can learn, right? If you tell an 8-year-old like, oh, you can learn math up to here because you are in second grade, but what if that kid could go more? He'll never know and you'll never know because you just put that barrier. And if there's something we've noticed is that when you remove that barrier, kids are capable of doing way more than we give them credit for. And so there was no grade levels and the kids were all learning mixed. And there was this one class in the school called Synthesis that was sort of like the trademark of the school, right? And schools from all over the world would come and observe this experimental school. And they were always so drawn to this class Synthesis because the kids were so empowered and they were basically working on this like real life simulations where they had real problems and they had to work in teams and compete against others. And they were using different mental models and different things. And they were building skills, the soft skills that we don't really teach or prioritize in school. So for example, how to communicate effectively, how to work in teams, how to navigate failure, right? Failure is something that we know that's going to come our way one way or another. And the earlier we learn to get comfortable with it and what to do with it, then the better you're going to be off in the real world, right? How to make decisions under pressure, how to think critically, how to figure things out when there are no instructions, right? These are all things that it doesn't matter what kind of future we go into, what kind of careers we go into, things can keep changing. If you are comfortable and you have a lot of practice doing these things, you've built these skills, then you're probably going to be successful in whatever it is that you put your mind to. And so this course really prioritized that. And then with the pandemic, the school went online and Chris and Frank, the other co-founder of Synthesis, told us, hey, let's grab Synthesis and let's put it online and let's make it sort of like the new subject for kids, right? Team problem solving and something that has to be part of every kid's education and everyone can have access to, not just the 48 kids that were part of this school, right? And Elon's kids. And so in order to sort of like spread this message, they found me and I had been writing about education online. Because one thing I didn't mention, when I left the system, I took this online course where it kind of taught me how to write for modern times and helped me connect with different people that were in the space and just helped me put my ideas out there and all these burning questions that I had. And so through that, people started to find me and I started to build an audience around this alternative education. And so Chrisman and Josh found me and they were like, Anna, all these things that you talk about are things that we're doing in this school. We would love for you to come and see one of our beta testing sessions. And so I did, and I was just like, I'll never forget that day when I first joined one of the first simulations. And mind that this was like beta testing. So like the technology wasn't quite that like there yet. And this was just the beginning, but I was blown away just by the way that these kids were communicating, the way these kids were problem solving and thinking, like they were really thinking, not that kind of like make-believe thinking that we see in classrooms around the world, traditional classrooms today. They were so excited that even though it was online, they were like at the edge of their seats. And so they were making decisions. They were getting comfortable. Like they would constantly get things wrong and they would not react the way that you see kids and even adults in real life react when things don't go their way. And I was like, oh my gosh, what's different? And it's that these kids had been through this program over and over every week. So that's just part of who they are now. And so I was like, yes, I'm sold. This is wonderful. I definitely want to be part of this. I can't wait for not only kids, but even adults to really be part of this. So we started with games. And then last year, we launched now the AI tutor, which was sort of like the second part of the component that was missing because we were targeting the soft skills that I just talked about. But what about the hardcore academics? Mm-hmm, right? And so we've known for a long time that the best way to learn is through one-on-one tutoring, right? You know, like that's how Alexander the Great had Aristotle. But like, how do you give kids, every kid in the world, an Aristotle, right? That's sort of like the holy grail of education. How can we build this super tutor that then, you know, you can have one-on-one instruction with every kid around the world? And so we've taken upon that challenge and we launched our first test last year and we modeled this tutor over this professor because we started with math, but the point is to cover all the STEM subjects and eventually literacy and every subject, right? So we modeled math over this, behind this teacher called Dr. Tanton, who's incredible. It's the teacher that we all wish we had. So not only is he a Princeton PhD and has written books about math and he's very, you know, he knows what, you know, the topic at hand very well, but he's an excellent teacher in terms of the stories that he uses that captivate you and the examples and the way he gives you feedback in a way that doesn't discourage you, but rather like makes you want to keep going and all these little things that make a teacher a great teacher. We've captured that into this AI tutor. And so the results that we've had so far have been really remarkable in the sense that kids are just flying through the content and not only advancing and getting at a really high level and compared to kids their age in schools, but also their attitude towards math is so refreshing, right? Like you often hear in schools and in different, and this would wrench my heart, like kids really believing, I'm not good at math. This is just not for me. I'm convinced that so many of these kids are good at math. The problem is that at some point in previous grades, they have this little pawns and then they were never able to catch up because no teacher, as good as the teacher is, you can't sit with every single student until you catch them up. But with an AI tutor, you can do that. It's infinitely patient. Yeah. It will stay with you until you've mastered the material. And so all this to say that now we have these two amazing products that are still evolving. And so we're starting to cover the hardcore academics and then the soft skills. And we believe that if we're able to do this, and it's just a few hours a day, right? So this whole notion of trapping kids in these environments where we limit movement, when we know it's so important for the development of children, right? Where we tell them, you know, again, what to think, what to consume, what they're going to learn, things that are very outdated, things that they will never use in their life, let's face it. And from this outdated curriculums, they're now learning, you know, real time from these apps that are like this tutor that's personalized, that, you know, it's more efficient. And then having this interactions with kids from all over the world where they play these simulations. And then what that does is it frees up the rest of the day to be kids, which is one of the biggest.
So are they, these kids are coming to the school, it's online school, and they're spending, you're saying they're spending way less time at school. Mm-hmm. And so they're not going to any other school. That's it. This is the school that they go to.
Yeah. Well, we have two different things. So we have homeschoolers using this as part of their education because right now the tutor doesn't cover all the subjects yet. We just launched it. Okay. And so right now it doesn't supplement completely. But we have like different alternative schools and homeschoolers using the math tutor to cover the math part of their academics. And then we have kids from all over the world that are using, the tutor to complement as well and playing this team simulations outside of school, even if they go to school.
Got it.
Part of it. Yeah.
Got it.
And so we're starting to now implement both teams and tutor into actual school so that it becomes like a subject, right? So that kids are able to actually receive this as part of their education.
So it's going to be, you're saying that these tools that you're building are going to be, whether it's the learning how to interact in teams or function within a team or with the AI tutor, are things that anybody in any school anywhere can utilize.
Yes, that is correct.
Got it. This need for bespoke learning. Our education system is all about dumbing down kids, equalizing them, one size fits all. You address this in the book. You're obviously working on this right now. When every single person is unique with different strengths, weaknesses, abilities, and when education should unleash, not restrict or limit genius, given this work that you're doing, given this sort of building in of AI, and I also think virtual reality, what is your hope or expectation? Looking forward to 2030, what is your hope on the one hand and your expectation on the other of how much these new technologies, new ideas, new approaches can positively impact education, which has been, stuck in the Middle Ages for so long.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So first, let me start by the realistic part. So if we were to fast forward to 2030, I don't think we're going to get rid of schools, like traditional schools, at least not anytime soon, because in the end, you know, at the end of the day, they serve as a babysitting center, right? Most families need to send their kids somewhere that's quote unquote safe, you know, for the majority of the day so that they can go to work. Yeah. And so for that,
the parents can work. Yeah.
Right. So that's, I think, the main reason why I think that they're not going to go anywhere. Second, because there's still a lot of resistance. Well, not resistance, but like many, many parents still believe and are 100% convinced, and I'm not saying they're wrong, that college is sort of the ends to a mean, like the whole goal of school. Like you go to school so that you can be ready for college. And even if we've seen that that's not necessarily 100% the case anymore, right? There's still like, I feel like it doesn't matter how articulate you are to explain how this has been changing and why this may not be, parents are still like, no, like I'm not going to take away that opportunity from my kid, even though a lot of this alternative, if not all of them, education experiences still allow for that, right? You still, it doesn't close off the opportunity. Yeah. It's just they open up and other options in case that's not the avenue you want to take. But for that reason, for those reasons mainly, I don't think they're going to go anywhere. Now, where I think we're heading is I feel like in the future, it's going to be, education is going to be more like a menu, right? You're going to have all these different options online, in person, right? With like micro schools, four schools, or all these online programs and AI tutor and apps and this and that. And as a family, you're going to be able to pick and choose and sort of like decide what your week is going to look like. Like, oh, my kid is going to go this 3 days a week to this place. And then they're going to be, you know, learning with the AI tutor for a few hours here. And then I'm going to send them to this sport. And then I'm, and so they're going to be able to sort of, you know, put together what that looks like. And that's sort of, in my mind, the best case scenario, right? And there are some startups that are developing this sort of portfolios or dashboards that are able to keep track of all the various learning things that you're doing so that they're all in one place as sort of your transcript that you then use to say, well, this is what I did. Like I didn't go the traditional route, but this is what I did, all these different things. And so I see that as an, but I also see, and I didn't think about this before, but I've been visiting different schools in the past few weeks. And I visit one in particular that really opened my eyes. It's a charter school. And even though it's a more traditional school, they are at another level when it comes to like their innovation labs and the kind of things that their students are doing as part of their, so they have their APs and they have all their courses that they're taking, getting ready. It's a prep school for college, but they're really getting this hands-on experience with technology in a way that I have not seen before. And they're coming up with these projects and working on these things and doing all these amazing things that one of the big things, and I was talking to the teachers there, is like, the problem is that kids will graduate from college and then they try to apply for jobs and they're like, oh, but you don't have any experience. And they're like, no, but we're solving for that. So now schools like this one are giving kids the experience with all this like AI and you know, with cybersecurity and like all these things that they're, you know, actually like working and getting their hands on in addition to learning the hardcore academics. And so they're going into the college or the workspace with experience already, which I think is fabulous. And I think that we're going to see that happening more in this quote unquote traditional schools like that. And so, and I think that in terms of, I think we're going to value way more all these soft skills that we were talking about earlier, because if there's something we've learned with COVID is that, you know, change is the only constant, right? We really don't know what the future has and hold for us. And so we need people and a generation of kids that know how to figure things out when there's no instructions, when they don't know, nobody's telling them what to do, they need to have that ability to say, hey, I've never seen this before, but I know what it takes. I know how to learn on my own and how to figure this out and how to acquire all these skills and all this knowledge in order to do this. So I think that people are going to value that way more and give them practice. And Synthesis is just one example of how you can get practice with that. But you're going to start to find more things that give kids practice with all the soft skills that they're not getting in school.
So good. Now I want to go learn all about all the stuff you're seeing because I'm supremely curious. I'm like, whoa, what's happening with education? This is exciting. Because we hear all the bad stories and how terrible the systems are. And they are. They're these massive systems, these huge school districts and just processing kids and treating them like widgets. And it's awful. And if the kid or the parents don't have a very strong sense of, no, I'm going to do what's best for my kid, then the kid's just stuck in us being processed by, it's awful. I don't even want to think about it. I didn't go to school growing up. I mean, I was homeschooled. So I did not participate in that. And I do not think like my brain has not been processed by a system. So I learned what I wanted to learn. My dad was a weirdo and he didn't want to send the kids to school and everybody thought he was crazy, but we learned at home. And so I don't even know what that system is. Like I couldn't possibly I wouldn't put up with it because I wouldn't tolerate someone telling me what I should or should not do or what I should learn or not learn. Or I'm going to edit that bit out.
No, that was great. That was great. Imagine people like you were homeschooled. Like, I love that because you have all this drive. Like that's something that I've seen so much in people that go a different route. Like they have this desire to keep learning and to keep doing things and to try things out and venture out.
The last person I had on the podcast was this neuroscientist, Chantal Pratt. And one of the things we were talking about was how malleable the brain is, I mean, on a day-to-day basis. So yes, for 6 months of life, your brain's super impressionable and you lose that, a lot of that, as you get older. But still, even as adults, every day our brain mm-hmm. is being patterned and repatterned. Mm-hmm. We're training our brain with everything we expose it to, external and internal. I think when we go through a system of education, I think everything you talk about and you've talked about in your book, I think it's way worse than what we think it is to our brains. The impact it has on our malleable, fiery, plastic brains can be devastating. It's really survival of the fittest in the education system, survival of the strongest, survival of the people with the individual to have the strongest sense of self, that they're able to succeed in spite of that horrible thing that they are subjected to from the earliest days, from childhood, from ABC, you know, preschool. It's just like, let's put them in there and then let's process them and let's do this to them. Let's control them. Let's make them, let's fashion them into being what we want them to be, rather than facilitate the unleashing, unfolding of their own unique genius, which if it were to be allowed, would add so much value to the world. And so in my past career, I was a coach and I work with human potential. That's all I care about, really, in everything I do. I mean, this podcast, everything I do is about how can we unleash human potential? How can we support people to be amazing? And so I'm super excited to talk with you because it seems like that's what you are completely committed your life to. And this work is so exciting. And so now I'm thinking, oh my God, now I have to go and check out Synthesis and like, maybe I want to try it out.
Totally.
Bringing us to this question. Can adults use Synthesis and Synthesis tools? Because these are things that as adults now we need to, these are skills we need to have as we move into the future.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely. So we play every Friday at Synthesis, like the adults that were in the company, we play this games because we're constantly developing different games, right? Where kids are, you know, running movie studios and colonizing space and creating this like ancient cities from scratch and, you know, putting down wildfires and managing ocean ecosystems, like all this crazy, curating art collections from like all over the world and taking into considerations like different conundrums within it and how do they make decisions over it. So it's really refreshing. It's really challenging, especially for adults that have not been trained to think this way and that have not yet gotten to a point where you're completely comfortable with uncertainty and with frustration and with confusion. When the adults play these games, it's so different than seeing it. Like they get way more, and let me include myself in that batch. We get way more frustrated that, you know, like a group of kids, we struggle more, we argue more, we let our emotions take over. And so it's crazy to watch. And then like it records you so that you can then actually see how you behaved in certain things. Like what happened when you let your team down and what happens when this, and it's fascinating to watch because you really realize, wow, there's so much lack of practice with this. And I cannot even explain the amount of times that adults have been like, when can we bring this to adults? And I think that every single person would benefit from, you know, playing, for example, these games on a weekly basis, because again, it's making you get comfortable with the uncomfortable, right? And we know that the most successful people out there and the people that are doing amazing things for humanity have mastered this skill, right? Of getting comfortable when things don't go their way and not getting discouraged and not saying, I give up, but rather, let me stand up. What did I learn from that? Let's keep going. And believing that if they keep going, there's something better on the other side, right? So that sort of ability. Mm-hmm. And then also the ability to say, like we were talking about earlier, I've never seen this before. I have no idea what I have to do this here, but I trust in my ability to figure it out. And so those are sort of the main things that Synthesis games teach you. And I think that this is something that every single human needs to practice and benefits from.
I want to talk about adults and applying some of the frameworks you have in the book. Because I think, look, not only do we have to keep up and keep pace with what's going on, but we all also need to be way more entrepreneurial.
Yes.
To succeed from a financial perspective, a career perspective, we need to think about everything we're doing differently. And we need more founders, we need more entrepreneurs, we need to be more entrepreneurial, even within our normal career path, even if we're working at different jobs or different teams. It's an entrepreneurial activity rather than, I'm going to go work here and I'll just be an employee or a member of the team. You can't think about the world that way any longer. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we are at a time when exponential change driven by new and explosive technologies require all of us to learn, unlearn, relearn. And in the 21st century, education is forever. Adapt or perish. Mm-hmm. What I want us to do is you have given some frameworks in the book, one of which is 5 lessons to unlearn. Mm-hmm. I'm going to walk through them and then let's talk about them mm-hmm. for adults.
Absolutely. Do you want to mention them or do we want to?
Yeah, I'll mention them. So 5 lessons to unlearn. 1, fearing mistakes.
Yes. So this is one of the big, big ones that, you know, it's very clear when you walk in a school setting, right? What we're doing is we're making kids afraid of taking risks because they know that if they don't succeed, they're going to get a bad grade. And that bad grade is going to go in their records and those records are going to haunt them until they go to college, et cetera, et cetera. This is crazy because if you think about it, kids are going, when you're a kid, that is the time that you should be allowed without any penalty to make mistakes because you're learning. You don't have all this like high stakes behind you, right? Like you're learning. Like when you're a kid, your responsibilities are not that many. Like there's not a family that you're sustaining or a marriage or a business, right? So that should be the time to let them explore, get things wrong, fail without penalizing them so that they are actually encouraged to keep going. And so that as adults, then they make less mistakes, right? Because you learn from your mistakes along the way. What happens when you make kids, you know, scared of making mistakes? Well, they naturally become risk averse. And that's what we're seeing in this generation. Kids that don't want to take on a challenge because they're scared of what could happen if they get it wrong. Kids that don't want to try new things because what would happen if, you know, I'm not good at it. This is really, really dangerous for this entrepreneurial mindset that you're talking about, right? Because that is precisely what entrepreneurs do well, right? They've mastered the ability of getting up after failure. And so I think that that is the biggest thing that adults need to unlearn in order to be able to pave the way for their kids, right? And so it starts by reflecting on your own experience growing up. Like, how did you feel about taking risks and what happened when you didn't get things right? And what were sort of those messages that you would receive from teachers, from parents? And then realizing that a lot of it comes from the social construct and that you can detach from that and unlearn that fear of making mistakes and understand that mistakes are the way that you learn, right? And are the way that you're able to keep going, right? And what we need in order to innovate and to keep progressing as a society. And so the faster that we're able to reflect in this and sort of break that paradigm, then the better we're going to be. So that's one of the main...
And it is paradigmatic. Yeah, it is. Sorry to cut you.
Yeah, no.
It is paradigmatic because it's a cultural sort of idea, belief, more as that, oh, you know, you want to be proper, you want to be right, you want to be perfect, and be just so, la da 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 da. Instead of, oh, it's okay to make a mistake and screw up in front of the world. And those who do get, oh yeah, I messed up, I get up and I go again. It's a paradigm we have to break out of. And as a society, as a nation, as a globe, if we start thinking, no, mistakes mean you're actually putting yourself, you're in the game. Mm-hmm. You're actually doing something, you tried something, you're growing,
right?
Rather than, oh, I'm perfect. If you're perfect, if you're so perfect, maybe you're not even doing anything at all.
Right. You get paralyzed and then you don't act on it, which is, yeah, absolutely. And it also creates this notion of, you know, in order to get there, you need to understand that saying I don't know is a good thing, right? It means that there's opportunity for you to keep learning. It means that you're going to give something a try and it may not go like good the first time, and that's fine. Like all these people that we see that have gotten to places and have achieved many things, most of them, if not to say all of them, haven't gotten it right from the first time. They just keep going after all those times that they mess up more intelligently until they achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve. So it's about sort of focusing more on the process to get somewhere and not just, you know, on the destination. And once you focus on the process, you realize all those, you know, hardships and all those obstacles that all these people had to overcome in order to get to where they are. And it makes you realize, well, that's part of the journey, right?
I love it. Just even having this conversation is so good for the brain. Mm-hmm. It just feels like, oh, wait a minute. You give yourself, we tend to like want to force ourselves into doing things and getting it right and making it happen and doing it now, especially if you are building stuff or creating new things or you're a founder or an entrepreneur or whatever. And just allowing yourself the right to fail and to fall and to make mistakes and to mess up. It's just like, oh, it's so freeing. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, I can just be like, whatever, I'm okay. So yeah, very therapeutic.
Really, totally. And let me just say one more thing about this. And this is something we've seen at Synthesis, for example, when we get kids at the beginning, it's not easy. So it's really it takes time and it's frustrating to get out of that habit because we're so conditioned, you know, to be scared of making mistakes. And so at the beginning, you would see kids losing their mind, being so frustrated. But the more that you engage in this practice and you put yourself through this and over and over again, you start to realize that nothing happens, nothing more than you're learning. You're learning something to do it again, smarter next time. And so once you start to understand that, then that's when it becomes a little bit easier. I don't think it will ever be super easy. Nobody says like, oh my gosh, I love to fail. This is wonderful. I feel great.
No, but
you start to understand how it's really helping you more than it's hindering you. And so I think it's important to give that, like, it takes time and it's not easy, but it's definitely doable. And the more you practice it, the better you're going to get, like, everything.
Yeah. So the second lesson to unlearn, fitting in.
This is a big one. And this is one that I really identify with because growing up, going to so many different schools and always being the new girl, my instinct was, well, I better find a way to fit in. You know, if I want to have friends, like, I better start, you know, using the accent that they're using. So I would quickly adopt their accent or doing the things that they were liking the things. So that was sort of my instinct. Although I did have my own personality and I was very, you know, aware of who I was and how I always try to fit in. And I thought that was sort of the way to go. And then it wasn't until I became an adult that I realized, oh my gosh, I wish I could talk to my 12-year-old self and be like, Anna, no, if you really try to break from the pack and do things differently and do what's in, you're going to attract the kind of people that are going to challenge you and that are going to, you know, help you become smarter and the people that, you know, align more with what you want to be and what you want to become. And so I think that school is very good at teaching you to fit in and to color inside the lines and to follow the path for success and to look up to the standard people and all this. But in reality, the real world rewards people who stand out, right? Who think outside of the box, who break from the pack and do something legendary by doing things differently. Those are the innovators, right? Those are the people. And it takes courage to do this, right? And it takes, you know, and sometimes people don't even know how to start. And something that I've realized is that if you look at little kids, they're very, very good at this. They're like looking again at things that are, you know, that we would overlook and are just because they're like, oh my gosh, look at this over here. And they'll sort of follow their curiosity. And that's when they start to figure things out that are different from what we see in these conventional places. And so definitely this notion of like, try to do what everybody's doing and follow the crowd. And it's like, no. Like try to the opposite, like try to focus on looking things from different angles and do what people are not doing and ask the hard questions. And I feel like that's where you really get to something interesting.
I love it. Lesson three to unlearn, waiting for instructions.
Oh my gosh. So I talk about this a lot. One of my biggest frustrations was seeing how in school, everything comes with a lesson plan and the specific detailed instructions. And we show kids the final product of what something creative should look like. And we tell them, you know, there's a right answer or there's a wrong answer, or this is the process. I don't care, you know, if you get to the answer using a different process, it's wrong. And all these things that it's like, you're teaching kids to wait for an adult to tell them what to do. And the real world doesn't come with instructions. Nobody in the real world wants to hire somebody that they need to constantly be telling what to do, that doesn't have the initiative to say, hey, I've got this, let me figure this out. We are training kids again out of this instinct that comes naturally to them when we, you know, water everything down and we put it. And not only that, but research shows that, you know, kids and adults and everyone, we actually crave a challenge. Like we don't want things to be like watered down and everything. Like, no, we've been trained that way. And therefore we think we like that, but really that's not interesting. That's boring, right? And I always use the analogy of video games. Like if you're playing a video game, kids, adults, whoever, you're not drawn to the one that it's super obvious and easy and you know how to get to the end super quickly and pass the next level. You don't want to play that. That's boring. You want the one that's challenging, that you have to think and you need to figure it out and you need to try and you fail and you pick yourself up, and then when you finally get there, you're like, oh, I achieved it. What's next, right? Humans are drawn to that complexity and are drawn to that challenge. And so when we give instructions and we water things down, we are removing that excitement from the learning process. And so I think that we have that backwards, and we need to train ourselves out of that and try to, you know, do things without instructions and stop asking for help all the time, but really put the brain to work and try to figure it out. And you're going to be surprised at the things that you're able to figure out on your own.
As we move into the next few years, 2030s, there are no instructions. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are even fewer instructions. Yep. We won't be able to look to the past for guidelines or mm-hmm. answers or mm-hmm. even frameworks. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to really figure it out mm-hmm. and trust ourselves to figure it out. It's a vital lesson to unlearn is waiting for instructions. Mm-hmm. We all do it. And even when we come out of school and we're looking at society for our, mm-hmm. what should I do now? What should I do next? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm at this age. I should do this now. Or people are doing that. I should do this. Or so-and-so did that. And they're blah, blah, blah. So maybe I should do that. So even though we're not getting instructions, we're still taking instruction mm-hmm. from what we see around us rather than following our truth or following our true motivations or instincts or impulses or inspiration that we need to follow in order to function effectively or make sense of this very new terrain. Mm-hmm. And it's survival. I mean, this is not going to be like, oh, well, maybe I'll figure this out. Or maybe all the stuff these people are talking about on this podcast is whatever. Mm-hmm. I really think people need to understand that this is survival time.
Absolutely.
Because the change is going to be, it's so massive. Mm-hmm. And for people like you, Anna, you're not just in the pool of people who get it, but you're in the pool of people who are shaping the future. Mm-hmm. So but for the multitudes out there, 99% of people out there, they're just waiting. They're sitting on sidelines watching, and an avalanche is coming and they're not moving. Mm-hmm. They're not getting their skis on and skiing on top of the avalanche or something. They're just like,
And you know, I don't think I've spoken about this before, and I'm still trying to like find the words to express what it is that I'm trying to say. But just to give you like one of my big concerns right now, and I'm very pro technology. I think that, you know, when done right, like it's really going to revolutionize in a good way our future.
Yes.
Yes. However, I am also very alarmed, and especially now hearing you talk about how, you know, all these people are just waiting in the sidelines and observing and I really don't think that kids should be using all this technology and being on social media and consuming all these things passively at such young ages.
Why? Because it's toxic. Because the algorithms are specifically designed to hook us, and they're addictive. Right. And we know that our brains are malleable. So what are they doing to our brains? In fact, algorithms are toxic for our brain. Recommender systems are toxic for our brain. They're actually destroying how our brains function. Because what do? They say, oh, you like that? I will work that groove in your brain and pattern out a pattern that is addictive, toxic. It's like alcohol or a drug. Mm-hmm. It is so bad.
Yep.
So, it's so bad.
And my big concern.
All of the founders, mm-hmm. all of the top founders of these social media companies, they don't let their kids go online. Why?
Right.
Because they know they have found ways to do something completely destructive to humanity.
Totally. Yeah. And here's the thing. If we feel it as adults and on, you know, our criteria in theory, it's like formed and we know how to make decisions. Yeah. We're more mature. Our brains are more formed. Like, so we're able to, well, not every adult, and it's really hard.
Not really.
But we are more able than kids to say, oh my God, I need to stop. Like, this is consuming. I just spent 3 hours scrolling. Oh my God, where did time go? Let me stop. We're able to sort of like start to put parameters or say, you know, this is a little bit too toxic. Kids have a really hard time doing this, especially because we've normalized it, right? They're like, well, everybody's doing it. They don't know any better. They don't know what we knew when we were growing up, and we didn't have this technology. We had to be outdoors, playing, interacting with others, getting bored, figuring things out, building things. And we were actually doing more things. Like, I feel like this generation, they're just passively consuming. And because these devices make time just go, you know, slip away, they're spending most of their days just, you know, consuming and not doing anything. And so I really worry about that. I feel like that's not the right use of technology. And I feel that they don't have the skills to self-regulate. And so we really need to put a firm, you know, and I think about it as a parent, you know, like, just say no. You know, you're not going to be in these devices until you are 16 or until you are 14, you know, like really limiting that. And it sounds harsh and it sounds extreme, but I feel like it's the only way to save this generation from just becoming passive, you know, people like in the sideline watching and just like, you know, no, we need more doers. And in order to put all this into practice, we really have to limit that consumption. And so I'm still juggling and what's the best way to go by this and still doing my research and still like informing myself and this. But really the instinct is, yes, this technology can be, you know, used for amazing things, but also we need to be very, very careful because kids are in an age where their brains are still developing. They don't have those self-regulation skills that we have. And so we really need to help them. And set those boundaries and parameters.
And in cigarette technology, they put the nicotine into the cigarette to make it addictive. It's as deliberate and even more deliberate than that. These social media companies have studied, researched, and devised mechanisms to hook our attention. And they go very deep into core aspects of who we are, deep in our psyche, looking at things like identity, the things that we hold on to most completely and whole-souledly, our identity, our core self, and they trigger that, and then they will use mechanisms to ensure that we are going to keep your attention. So people say, oh, large language models, ChatGPT, oh my God, AI is taking off. AI has been used against humanity since the 2010s, the beginning of the 2010s, and aggressively, and recommender systems have been used to grip us, hold us, control our minds, control our behavior, control our activities, control our shopping. And they've been used and they continue to be used in accelerated and more aggressive fashions. As adults, we have literally no defenses. Can you imagine what a child mm-hmm. with their brain, what it's doing to them? Mm-hmm. And it's doing to them is not just brainwashing. They are being warped. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. terrifying that's happening. And we're sitting mm-hmm. down and now the rest of us are sitting and saying, oh, we don't know anything. We're hopeless. Right. We're helpless. This mass weaponization of technologies is unfolding.
Yeah.
And we're sitting on the sidelines watching it destroy our kids.
This goes with one of the next lessons to unlearn, which I talk about, which is questioning everything, right? So one of my biggest critiques of the education system is that we teach kids to believe everything we tell them, right? If it's on the textbook, then it must be right. If it's, you know, if your teacher says so, then it must be right. And we don't let them question things because then if they do, they're being rebellious and it's a threat and this and that. And it's like, imagine that combination, right? Kids that are going through that system, they're learning to blindly believe everything. And then pair that with social media and all these things that the algorithm is throwing at you. The kids are just blindly believing all these things. Many of them are not skeptics, which is something that I really push parents to focus on with their kids at home, teaching them how to, you know, raising skeptics. And that's not a bad thing, is teaching them how to discern right information from wrong information, how to look for, you know, the different stories, who's telling, who are the sources? Like, should I blindly believe this? No, question things. Like all this, it's a skill that we're not teaching in school. We're actually teaching the opposite in most schools.
Opposite.
And then it's really a recipe
pair
for disaster.
That.
Yep.
And I think when we look at the Gen Z, and I don't know the Gen Alpha, what's going to happen with them, but they're so depressed. They are so miserable. They are so like fatalistic, nihilistic. They have no hope.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because their lives were entirely encapsulated. They're born in this era. They grew up with this digital devices. Their brains are warped by it. They don't know a world before it.
Mm-hmm.
They can't ground themselves in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I think the real question is, sort of for someone like you and for me. So we are in this tech space, but we care about people and educating them and helping them to thrive. So very similar in that sense. But there is a move, there's an idea in the tech world that if you say anything negative about tech, then you're anti-tech, right? You have to be pro-tech or you're on the bad side. You're just a Luddite and a loser. And that's not true.
Mm.
We care about humans and we want tech to be used for the well-being of humanity. And we have to have a very clear voice and not be afraid to stand up for that.
Mm.
Because there are people in the tech world who want us, the people who get it, to step aside and let them have their way with humanity mm-hmm. in the name of progress and technological advancement. And oh, if you're against, if you say one word against tech, you must be a bad person who is so stuck in the past and just a loser. And that's not the case. We're like, let's use these technological advancements to advance humanity, but really advance humanity, not advance humanity in the way that some mm-hmm. tech founder thinks it should be in their image and likeness, mm-hmm. which is what they want to be, gods. But rather, how does this technology support the individual advancement of each unique human being and unleash that ability? And we, someone like you and someone like me and other people who get this, this is, we have mm-hmm. a massive job role to play in bridging these two ideas and ensuring that whatever happens, humans are not left out of the loop. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're feeling in your gut as a teacher, as an edupreneur, as a mom, mm-hmm. as a parent. You're like, as someone who's traveled the world as a child and seen all sorts of different scenarios, you know that in your gut. And I feel like, I don't know, that's, yeah, That's right there.
Totally. No, absolutely. I think you're absolutely, absolutely. I think we need, like, everything. Take everything with a grain of salt. Like, I don't like it when people say, like, they like an idea, but then they feel like they need to adopt everything about that idea and then tie their identity to this idea. And then, like you said, if you say one thing, then you're no longer part. And it's like, that's not how the world works. And if you do that, then you're going to be biased. Then you're going to, you know, not see other sides of it. That's why I don't like to put when the people ask me, like, what's the educational approach that you go? I'm like, I don't like one approach, right? I like many of them, and there are things about them that I don't agree with, but that's very personal, right? And I'm able to grab the best things of all these things that make sense to me, right? And so you don't have to opt into everything, right? And so again, yeah. People see me and they associate me with, like, video, like, oh, Anna is pro video games. Anna is pro, you know, online education and pro technology. And I can be all those things, but also acknowledge all the downsides and also saying it's all about having a balance and also saying, yes, but there's different ages that you can start to do this, or there's different parameters. And so we just have to really be careful about any of these things, right, that are competing for our attention and that are trying to, you know, take over this precious year, especially for, like, kids who are going through, you know, and when people ask me, why are you so obsessed with kids and shaping the, it's because these are the people that are going to shape our future. Like, we're no longer going to be here. This is, and then who do we want those people to be, right? And right now I'm a little concerned, right? Not to say very concerned with the way that we've been doing things, right? Because of what we just talked about, like, kids going through the system and then pairing up with this mindless use of technology, that's really dangerous. And so it's up to us, the parents and the, you know, the people in the ed tech space and even the educators, right, to really stop and say enough. Like, we need to make a change before it's too late.
We're entering an era when being a generalist will be more valuable than being a specialist. That's already happening with the emergence of generative AI. In many cases, machines will become the specialists mm-hmm. and humans will find that they need to be generalists. They will need to have a broad understanding of many fields and how they interconnect and intersect, and then be able to deploy or oversee the machines that will then accomplish specific tasks or mm-hmm. play defined roles. You write about developing range. Mm-hmm. Give us some thoughts on what someone of any age can do to expand their understanding, develop their range of knowledge, and become more of a generalist in order to be more, honestly, to find a job in this new world.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I love this question. So I originally became inspired, like, interested in this idea of range when I read David Epstein's book, Range, right? And the mm-hmm. reason was because I was starting to notice in kids nowadays that they don't want to try different sports or different things because they have this fear that they have to commit to it. And so it goes hand by hand with this idea of you know, if we want kids and therefore like adults to try different things, then we need to sort of remove this expectation that they have to stick with everything, right? And so...
They were afraid to try things because they thought if they entered that space and tried it, then they would have to be stuck with it.
Yes. And then what if I don't like it? Or what if I'm not that good at it? But I already made the decision. And it's because that's sort of the mentality that we're brought up to. Like, right? Like we talk about, you know, like sticking to things and you know, really persevering. But what if you're persevering in the wrong direction, right? And so it's interesting because if you look at the...
You talk about learning to quit, like knowing when to quit.
Yes, exactly. Which is something we don't teach kids and something that I was never told, you know, growing up, for example. And I think it's this idea of... Sometimes it's okay to quit if you're persevering in the wrong direction or if it's not a right fit for you. And it's okay. We have this negative stigma of, you know, if you quit, you're a loser, or if you quit, you're never going to make it. But sometimes if you have the right reasons and if you tried something enough and you're like, you know, this is not for me. If you don't quit and you stay there, well, not only are you probably going to be miserable, but you're closing doors and opportunities to do things that are probably more suited to you, right? And so in order to give kids the chance to try different things, we need to tell them, okay, we're going to come up with a list of principles or ideas why you may want to quit after you try. And you know, they have to be legit, right? It can't be like, oh, because it's too hard. Like, no, that's not a reason why you quit, right? And so you come at the beginning of any activity, you come, and by the way, I talk about kids, but this applies to adults. Like all the things that I talk about really apply to adults, right? So coming up with this list of like conditions or principles why you may quit after you try something. And it kind of gives you that, you feel more up to it, right? And again, I'm talking from a place where I've seen a lot of kids that are risk averse. And so I was like, maybe this will sort of allow them to give it a try and to take that risk.
Right.
And so I think that if you look at the Nobel Prize winners or the people that are, you know, doing, again, amazing things for humanity, they usually come from this generalist background. They know a little bit of different things and therefore they're very good at what they do and they differentiate themselves from other, whether it's sports, like players or in the professional world, like anything, because they come from that generalist background. And so, for example, in my case, what I do is I rarely read books about education or, you know, about kids. I've been starting to read a little bit, but I find myself dropping them because I'm a mom, like dropping them because I'm like, my instinct, I feel like it's better most of the time when it comes to these things. And so I'm better off reading about books about, you know, gaming or about finance or about the sports world or about, you know, mental models or different things. And then seeing how I can connect this to what I do, which is working with kids, right? And changing education for kids. But I feel like it's this, and that sort of gives an edge to my thinking, to my writing, to the things, to the message that I convey, right? And so I feel like that's sort of my way of having a little bit of expertise, again, that word, but like, you know, knowledge in these different areas. And so I feel like that's very valuable to start from a young age. But even if you didn't, like as an adult, you can start doing that. Like, what are you interested in? Poker? It has nothing to do with what you're doing. Then you should probably read about that or learn about that because you will find something that connects or something that makes you better at what you currently do. Yeah. And so you've seen this with things like magic. Like who would know? But if you learn about magic, there are things that you can actually incorporate to so many things in the real world. And so that's just like one example. And so that paired up with then specific knowledge, which I think is very different from specialization, right? For, you know, being like in one, your specific knowledge is sort of like that combination of things things that you love doing and that, you know, other people see as work, but you see as play and things that, you know, people are willing to pay money for, but that you enjoy doing, you're very good. And sometimes these are not like academic things or it's sort of a blend of different things that make you super unique and weird in your own way. And I talk about in the book how your parents are very good at helping you figure that out because it usually tends to be something that you were really interested in since you were little, not always, but most of the time. And so pairing that range of experiences that you've had with different things with your specific knowledge, I think that that's when you find sort of that niche or that motor that will help you differentiate yourself in this world, right? Where people are, you know, used to doing sort of like the same thing and looking like everybody else and this and that. And so I think that once you are able to do that, it's really hard for AI to, you know, replicate you or take over your job because you really have a unique intersection of things that I don't think can be emulated by AI.
Yes, that's so good. Exactly. I think that what AI is going to force us to do is become more human, tap into our true gifts, our true genius, and bring that out into the world. If we're massively adaptable creatures, and we have this, we've proven throughout history that we can adapt no matter what. And so AI comes into the mix. And I know a lot of people think there'll be AGI, superintelligence, the singularity, AI is going to outstrip us, outpace us, be better than us. And I think as much as AI could set a bar, and I mean, of course, these large language models have access to all of the information on the internet, right? But, well, first of all, it has all of the information on the internet, but it does mm-hmm. not have a heart and soul. Mm-hmm. It does not have that capacity to always create something original and new, which is another topic I think we even talk about in this conversation. I don't think we're going to get to this whole question of just replicating existing stuff or coming up with original, unique ideas. I try to tell people, because I really believe that we've been brainwashed into thinking there's nothing new under the sun. So let's just go copy what someone wrote on the internet and pretend it's ours, which is a whole generation of people who do that and they think it's okay. And I'm like, what? Where's your original mm-hmm. thought? Why have you been taught that you can't be original? Every originality is not like coming up with the greatest new idea that ever existed that was never known before. No, originality is taking whatever exists or has existed and giving your unique take mm-hmm. on it. You've been trained out of believing that you have anything, that your perspective is valuable. And I think generative AI is going to force humans to have no choice mm-hmm. but to value their unique perspective, lenses, mm-hmm. journey, experiences, life, heart, soul, passion, meaning, who and what they are and what they were born and meant to be. And generative AI is going to force humans to have to deliver that. And that is a good thing.
Amen. Yes, I agree with you. Absolutely.
Sorry. I think I've been wanting to say that for a minute.
This has been a very, very enlightening conversation. And we've spoken about things that I, you know, usually are not included in the things that I talk about. And I like that. I like that. So I appreciate your passion for like digging deep into those questions and those realities and your concerns. Like, this is all very, very positive.
So in your research for the book, in your work in general, what surprised or surprises you? Like, what's something that stood out that like, that blew my mind? I never thought that was would be the case.
So the biggest one, and I realized, you know, upon leaving the system and doing my research and then understanding really how kids' brains work and observing them, is this idea that we talked briefly about it before in the podcast, that kids, it's a counterintuitive insight, right? Like, kids actually crave a challenge and they want complexity. They want that hard thing. They want for you to push them. And we've been convinced, and for years, you know, as a teacher and I would believe the opposite. And, you know, that's sort of what they teach you in the system. Like, no. Like, we need to come rescue them when they get stuck. We can't let them get frustrated. We can't let them get confused. We need to water things down. We need to give them the instructions. We need to make sure. No, it's the opposite. And the way that you create the way that you cultivate, you know, all these things, because again, it comes from an instinct that you're born with, right? Then that's when you have kids that are resilient, that are mentally tough, that they know what they can and what they can't do, that are, they're aware of their strengths. When you give them those opportunities, you're telling them and you're making them believe, oh, I am capable of taking upon this challenge. And that drives them. So that's probably one of the biggest insights that has driven a lot of my work since I found out about this.
I think that would surprise a lot of people. And maybe, hopefully, we can change how we approach kids and how we approach ourselves and giving mm-hmm. ourselves the latitude to walk through complexity and figure it out. Mm-hmm. What's one thing, Anna, that listeners can do through your lenses? Mm-hmm. What's one thing listeners can do to become more ready for our very different future?
I think the biggest thing is to prioritize lifelong learning. I think that if you're able to keep yourself hungry and curious and question things and really, you know, find time, because I know a lot of people say I'm too busy or I don't, but find the time to sort of go where your curiosity leads you. I think that that's one of the biggest things that we can do, because nowadays information is at the tip of our fingers, right? What's lacking is that desire to keep learning and to keep, you know, updating your thoughts. And so the more you can really preserve that, the better. And I think that one of the best ways to do this is to go back to your younger self and look at your younger self and see what are those things that you were doing naturally and how can you go back to that and emulate kids in that sense, right? And any adult can do this. Like, you just have to watch kids if you don't remember your own experience and pick up on what they're doing. But that desire and that thirst to keep on learning and that curiosity, if you're able to preserve that, then it doesn't really matter what the future throws at you. You're probably going to be able to figure it out.
That's so good. So, so good. Oh, I love it. Oh, yay. This is such a good conversation. Yay. What's next for you, Anna?
So I've been talking a lot about what's broken with the school system and what's wrong, because I'm a firm believer that we need to sort of rip the Band-Aid and see, you know, what are the issues and the problems in order to stop, reflect, and start to make a change. You really need to see what we've been doing wrong. But now I'm focusing on, let's now look at the schools around the world that are doing things right and that have figured something out that others perhaps haven't. Or what are they doing that can spark ideas for parents, for educators, for people deciding to open schools or different things that they can, you know, copy or, you know, grab things and adapt it to their environment. So I'm starting to go on this tour of different alternative schools and recording the tour. Wow. And I'll be putting it out there as a mini series.
Are you gonna make a documentary?
Yeah, so that's sort of, I'm not sure, but we've already started. So I visited 4 schools in Miami. And so I'm starting in Miami because that's where I am right now. But I've been invited to different schools all over the world. So I'm trying to like figure out, you know, what this year is going to be like. But I think that that's something that hopefully will spark ideas for, okay, now what do I do? I already understand that the system's broken. What are my alternatives? What can I do? And so hopefully that will shine some light up to that.
I love it. I see a Netflix series.
Imagine that sort of that's aspiration that we have here. We'll see.
Anna, this is so great. I just had so much fun. We have to do this again soon.
Absolutely. I loved your energy. I loved your questions. I loved your passion and the whole vibe of this conversation. I really appreciate it, Misha.
Thanks for coming on.
Make sure to listen, follow, and subscribe for new episodes wherever you get your podcasts and on our YouTube channel.